Time goes by so quickly. We were going to have questions. Were there some questions that really jumped out at you that somebody wanted to, anybody wanted to ask of any one of the speakers? Yeah.
It's more so a comment. Oh, I guess I need a mic. It's really a comment. Like, I grew up in Scarborough, and my parents are Jamaican, and all my friends, we all asked each other where you're from. So I think we need to expand that as a narrative that doesn't always have to warrant a defensive response, that it's actually part of Black diaspora to wonder where everyone is from, meaning everyone who is Black, where we're from, that there's something in that that also speaks to the collective of trying to understand our collective experience as Black people, that, yeah, we're Black in skin, but we all come from somewhere different, right? And we all bring something different. And to that end, I just wanted to ask, sorry, I can't remember your name. Yes. Your story was incredible. It was like listening to a book in person. I'm just wondering, you didn't put yourself much into that narrative. I just wondered about a little bit about yourself. Like, obviously you grew up in Toronto. What was that like in brief? I don't want to take up too much more time.
That's a good question. As I mentioned, I was born in 1954 at St. Joseph's Hospital and grew up in Toronto. Back then, there weren't very many Black people. There weren't very many Black families. And that's why I mentioned when the Redmonds, my father's generation, the 40s, you know, Depression-era children, and through the 40s, the Carnegies, they emigrated from Jamaica in 1912. That story is amazing because Mr. Carnegie was a janitor, but he was a very, very smart man. The reason is that, yeah, he worked as a janitor for Hydro for all those till retirement, but he bought land. He bought valuable land, you know, around Abbey Road and Bloor and really good areas. So growing up here, basically, we weren't segregated like my cousins still live in the States, you know. But it's weird because when I was a kid growing up in the 50s and early 60s, I grew up with white kids. We married white people. and we married all kinds of people. It didn't matter if they were Jewish or Native or white Canadian. It didn't matter. And so I didn't think of myself as Black or Negro or colored or anything like that. In fact, I playing with the kids that were all white around us, and it was middle class, upper middle class upbringing, and we grew up on a ravine in a house that my father built, and we all built our own houses in those days, and the kids were white kids of professional parents, you know, professional fathers or doctors or lawyers, and my father was a hardworking laborer for the Redmond Haulage Company, but growing up that way, I remember coming home from school one day with a group of kids, and one of the kids said, "Oh, Cindy Redmond, I heard you're half Negro." And I said, "Half Negro," I said to myself, and I thought, "What's a Negro?" And I didn't know what that word was because it was never used growing up. I didn't know Black from white, from red, from orange. I didn't know. So I came home and asked my dad, and he said, "Okay, we're going to sit down." My dad's Black, you know, and my oldest brother's Black, so what? And so that had to be explained. And so it was growing up, I didn't get to know, even going to church, Presbyterian church, I didn't get to know Black people at church because there were no Black people, they were white. So that's another thing, was because there was segregation in a sense in my parents' day, there were limitations. They weren't allowed in white clubs. So they created, the Black people here Island and American descendants created their own clubs. The Eureka Club was one of them that black people belonged to, that it was an upper echelon club. It equals any Canadian establishment club for white people that was for accomplished black people. And these black people were professionals a lot. Dr. Bouton was obviously a very successful doctor and surgeon. And there were lawyers and this and that. And my uncle Herb Carnegie, the Carnegies coming from Jamaica in 1912, Herb Carnegie, very successful investor. He produced millions in investments for others with Investor Syndicate. So, you know, growing up here was, it was awkward, a bit awkward for me, because I kind of didn't fit with the black and I kind of didn't fit with the white. And I was on the outside going to school dances. I was going to school dances with white girls. That kept me away from the guys. So I wasn't around the white guys, and there were no black guys. So I was a wallflower against the wall, thinking I'm really ugly, or I'm different, or I'm a gnome, or I'm just not like everybody else. I'm just not good enough. So I grew up with that. So that was a challenge for me. You know, was the fact that our relatives were spread out through Toronto, Willowdale, and Scarborough, and us in North Park. So there was nobody I could relate to. So it was difficult that way, because it's like my cousin Rochelle Carnegie would say, we kind of fit as far as being around the girlfriends, but when the guys came into it, we're on the outside. Until later on.
Anything else? One question. One last question. Yes.
Oh yes.
Just wanted to commend whoever organized this. Beautiful. I'm not going to bore you. I have a question I'd like to engage all their sister from Jamaica. But before that, my eldest brother came to this country in 1969 from the island of St. Kitts. And he's now an Anglican priest, Leonard Leader. And I grew up in a single-parent home. My mother tried to immigrate, but for 2 months, but returned to 9 children she had left. She just couldn't make it. I'm wondering, your mother having left Jamaica, and you having not seen your mother for 15 years, my dear sister, what was the relationship like with you and your mother? And considering that many parents who've sacrificed, who've left their children for a long time, just did not get along, and many children seem not to have coped, having not been with a mother, especially in those formative years. You got me?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
My mother and I, we didn't have a good relationship at all. It was like a stranger to me. My grandmother was my mother. Up to today, if I'm talking about is my grandparents. They were my parents. I didn't know my dad, but my grandmother was my mother. My mom, it was a very strange, she was a complete stranger. It's really now that I fully understand the sacrifice, because without it, I have aunts and uncles who are here because of her cousins. Like, she was the first person that came, that left home, really. So I understand the sacrifice as an adult, but as a child, you don't understand it. You just know that, who are you? A complete stranger. And the relationship was strained and testy all the way up until her death in 2006, regrettably, but it's a part of the sacrifice. I have a poem I wrote called Sacrifices of the Dream. And that for her was a part of that whole she didn't have the freedom to travel, which I didn't understand. She took very good care of us. Like, when I tell you, I had gold chain with real gold, with pendants and earrings and bathing suit when people were bathing in their underwears in the river. So I know she took very good care of us, but if that whole narrative had to be rewritten, I would change it. I would absolutely change it. There's nothing like that, you know, if it means eating out of the one pot forever. But of course, hindsight is 2020, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, why I just want to add to that, because your story and growing up with your grandparents is typical of what many Black women have experienced, whether we come from Jamaica or other, because I know that my mother was raised by her grandmother, and because her mother had to go into work, and for me to come from where I was in Nova Scotia and develop and become the educated woman that I am and become the professional woman that I am, and to be the first African Canadian to be Chair of Federation of Labor Vice President, right, was meant for me. I had to leave my daughter back in Nova Scotia until I got established, because many of us, that's how we advance, right? We want a better life, so we have to move forward. And that's the experience of and the sacrifice that Black women will make for their children. But I just want to ask before we close to say to your point, I thank you for sharing that, because I wanted to say, even though when we first moved here and we were asked that question, and my daughter's documentary is about that, it's also about her documentary about celebrating the Canadian experience, and so people will know. For me, it's not an offensive question anymore. It's a question that I embrace, because it's an opportunity to educate and to share experiences. So I'm sorry I didn't point that out when I was up there, so I'm glad you did, because that's what it means to us, to be able to let people know that we've been here, and we're, you know, we have a proud Canadian history that's worth sharing and talking about it. So I'm glad you got to do it tonight. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And can I just add, one of the reasons that so many, the mothers came up to Canada without their children was because they weren't allowed to bring their children. I mean, it wasn't a matter of them choosing to come. They were not supposed to have children, in fact. They had to say that they were single, not married, and did not have dependent children. And that's how they got into the country. And that's what's, yeah. That was very important, and that comes out in the exhibit. That's explained in the story that Sybil Wilkinson tells, who's a member of this congregation. I don't think Sybil's able to be here tonight. But she, in her story, she talks about that fact, and that's how one got into the country back in those days.